Chinese diplomats are in Kyiv and headed to Moscow.
Analysts here see no reason to expect Li Hui's visit to be a game changer, but are positive about the involvement of China as a neutral party.
Plus, a look at how and why Russian missile attacks were a strategic failure.
You know, these kinds of things, you know, whenever you see a missile, story of a missile hitting an apartment complex, for example, that is tragic. You know, it's tragic and it's a war crime, but it doesn't help the Russians win the war.
And later in the program, we meet some Russian tourists vacationing in Egypt. How do they feel about what's going on at home? Today is Thursday, May 18th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Missiles rained down on Kyiv and Odessa overnight. One person was killed. The AP's Karen Chamas reports.
Russia has launched cruise missiles at Ukraine's capital and the Odessa region in anticipation of a counteroffensive. Loud explosions were heard in Kyiv, and falling debris caused a fire in a non-residential building. In the southern region of Odessa, one person died and two were wounded in a Russian missile attack. However, a spokesperson for Odessa's military administration said most of the missiles were shot down over the sea. Earlier in the week, Ukrainian air defenses thwarted an intense Russian air attack on Kyiv, shooting down all missiles aimed at the capital. Ukraine's military defense has been bolstered by sophisticated Western-supplied systems. I'm Karen Chamas.
On Thursday, U.S. President Joe Biden arrived in Japan for a summit of leaders from the Group of Seven Nations. They're expected to focus on countering China's economic practices as well as supporting Ukraine in its battle against a Russian invasion. Jake Sullivan is National Security Advisor.
Obviously, the war in Ukraine, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, looms large and will be a significant topic of conversation. There will be discussions about the state of play on the battlefield. There'll be discussions about the state of play on sanctions and the steps that the G7 will collectively commit to, on enforcement in particular.
The summit will also include leaders from Canada, France, Germany, Italy, Britain, and the European Union. We'll have our daily update with Anna Chernikova in just a moment. First, though, she filed this report on Chinese Special Envoy Li Hui's arrival in Kyiv this week to discuss efforts by his country to mediate between Russia and Ukraine. Ukrainian analysts say Kyiv has no illusions about China's ability to deliver a peace agreement, but they do say it's important for Ukraine to maintain a dialogue with China. Here's Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Chinese Special Envoy Li Hui's visit comes after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Chinese President Xi Jinping spoke by phone last month, their first phone call since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine began. That call marked a new stage in Ukraine-China relations. President Zelensky said the conversation was long and meaningful. He announced the appointment of the new Ukrainian ambassador to China the same day. China says its priority is to promote peace talks and promised to send a special envoy to Ukraine. Li Hui arrived in Ukraine on May 16, meeting with the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine, Dmytro Kuleba, for talks on ending hostilities. Volodymyr Fesenko, a political analyst in Kyiv, describes Li Hui's visit as shuttle diplomacy that will serve, more than anything, Beijing's interests in the region. He said, this special representative will work not only to overcome the war between Ukraine and Russia, but more to strengthen Chinese influence in Europe. It is important for Ukraine that China is a peace mediator rather than a direct military ally of Russia. At the same time, Vita Golod, who heads the board of the Ukrainian Association of Sinologists, emphasizes the importance of maintaining a dialogue with China and seeing what it has to offer. She says, we should not make an enemy of China. This is our task at the moment, to leave China in the position they are taking. This is a Chinese game, and we have to perceive this game as a Chinese strategic position in the long run. When we analyze the so-called peace plan, China's position on the settlement of what they call the Ukrainian crisis, we saw that there are common points between the peace plan and Zelensky's peace formula. There is something to work with. Analysts here see no reason to expect Li Hui's visit to be a game changer, but are positive about the involvement of China as a neutral party. On the streets, Ukrainians are more skeptical. Maxim, a Kyiv resident, says, I believe that China can be a mediator in the negotiations, but they have their own goal, purpose and interest in this. And I believe that, unfortunately, not for the benefit of Ukraine, but for their own benefit. Anastasia, also a resident of Kyiv, says, when the war started, China was not on our side. From the very beginning, it supported Russia, and I would not want it to be a mediator in the negotiations. But it decides a bigger role for our country than anyone else, because it has some direct connection with Russia. After 2 days of talks with Ukraine's foreign minister, it was still unclear what next steps China will take to try to end the war Russia started with its invasion. Anna Chernikova for VOA News, Kyiv.
And Anna Chernikova is back with our daily update, some details about last night's shelling, and why today is a special day for Ukrainians.
It was another massive attack on Ukraine over the night. For the moment, we have confirmation that 30 missiles were targeting Ukraine. 29 were destroyed. One missile hit the area in the west part of the country. We know that there are some injured people in the Odessa region. And also, there is information about a casualty in Odessa region. In terms of the damages, there are some areas damaged in Kyiv and Kyiv region due to the debris. And in Kyiv, for instance, non-residential building was on fire, and also some surrounding areas went on fire due to the debris. Similar situation in Odessa region.
Now, how does last night's shelling in Kyiv compare to Monday night's? Was it as loud? Was it as intense, as scary?
Well, no, it was less intense, less scary, less loud, for sure. I think that Monday night was just extraordinary still. For instance, in my district, it was a very clear sound of air defense in action, and I've heard at least three missiles going out from the system, air defense system, and also three explosions were heard quite pretty loud, but not as loud as on the night of Monday. So it was quite loud in some districts of Kyiv. So definitely people didn't sleep. Definitely people went to the shelters or to the corridors at least. But it was definitely not that intense. Probably it's not very good to say, but comparing to what happened a couple of nights ago, this night was not as bad for Kyiv citizens as it was previously.
And now I understand today happens to be a special day in Ukraine. Anna, can you tell us more?
Yes, it's very, very important day for Ukrainian culture. Today is Vyshivanka Day. Vyshivanka is Ukrainian traditional clothes. Vyshivanka is usually it's a short, but it could be also a dress. So it's traditional Ukrainian clothes with embroidery, and different regions have different style of this elements, and people on this day wear different different colorful types of vyshivanka, and it's really, really nice to see in Kyiv, for instance, a lot of people wearing vyshivankas today, and it creates this additional positive mood for people in Ukraine.
Does the holiday commemorate anything special, or just a chance to celebrate Ukrainian heritage?
It's just about Ukrainian heritage, so it's not a day off or anything like that. It's more about commemorating traditions and and something really special in Ukrainian culture, because this kind of clothes comes from centuries ago and remain in Ukrainian culture for centuries. So it's quite quite an important piece of wardrobe for Ukraine and piece of heritage for Ukraine.
Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. Since February of 2022, Russia has fired thousands of missiles and drones at Ukraine's cities, infrastructure, and military forces. These attacks have killed and maimed thousands of Ukrainian civilians and military personnel, but despite the heavy toll of Russia's missile war in Ukraine, the attacks have, for the most part, failed to produce the kind of decisive strategic results that Moscow likely expected would bring about Ukrainian capitulation. I'm joined by Ian Williams. He's a fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies.
Well, if you look at, you know, their objectives through the war have shifted. You know, at first it was going after air defenses and the Ukrainian Air Force. They're hitting airfields. Next, they were going after things like transportation infrastructure, you know, trains, railheads, things like that, bridges, to try and disrupt the flow of you know, weaponry to Western weaponry to the Ukrainian armed forces. Then they went after the electrical grid for quite some time. And, you know, in each of these phases, they have essentially failed to complete the mission. Right. Western weaponry is still flowing to the front lines. The Ukrainian Air Force, air defenses are still operating at a pretty high level. The grid, while, you know, it was fragile, is recovering, and the Ukrainians still have power. And now we're seeing this kind of flailing, not quite sure what their objectives are right now.
So what went wrong?
Well, you know, a lot of people will point to the missiles themselves. They're saying the missiles are failing or they're inaccurate. I don't see a lot of evidence of that. What I see is poor operational planning. You know, early in the war, you know, they were doing things like, you know, they'd attack an airbase with cruise missiles, and they would hit it with maybe 6 or 8 cruise missiles, and that's just not nearly enough. But by comparison, if you look at the attack on the Shayrat Air Base in Syria that the U.S. did after the chemical weapons attack several years ago, you know, the United States fired almost 60 cruise missiles at a single air base. And we're looking at just so relatively few, much fewer than would be necessary.
Now, there's clearly two things at play here. One is Russia's failures. The other is the Ukrainians' success. What did they do right?
Well, there was this, I think, a critical moment in the war, and it came about 2 days before the war started. And what happened, what we've learned now, is that the Ukrainians moved a lot of their stuff around. Anything that would move air defenses, mobile air defenses, got moved out of bases. A lot of their supply depots full of things like artillery ammunition got emptied out and dispersed around the country. So those first few nights of the war, when those Russian cruise missiles came in on pre-programmed targeting, essentially hit empty warehouses, empty garages, and a lot of the, you know, air defense and artillery and the things that have really been decisive in the war survived that initial onslaught. And that turned out to be foundational for the Ukrainian military success henceforth. And they've since been using those kinds of tactics very effectively to foil a lot of Russia's air attacks. You know, using mobility, deception. And so even if Russia does identify a target, by the time the missiles get there, whatever they were aiming at is gone.
Now, this report was written before Monday night's attack on Kyiv that used several hypersonic missiles, other ballistic missiles and drones, and in all honesty, caused very little damage. Is Monday night's attack and lack of results still a symptom of the same problem for Russia?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the attack that we saw was actually, you know, it used a lot of different kinds of missiles from a lot of different trajectories. It was a pretty sophisticated attack. But at the same time, it was also into the teeth of a very heavily defended area, right? You had Patriot batteries there, you had NASAMS, you have a lot of different things. And the objectives are still a little bit unclear, but it seems to be that they were going at trying to maybe destroy the Patriot battery itself, which if you look at how the state of the Russian precision-guided missile arsenal, where they could use that to better use. I'm not sure going after a Patriot battery in Ukraine in Kyiv is the best use of that. It's almost like they're going after it for symbolic purposes or simply, you know, trying to punish the Ukrainian civilian population. You know, these kinds of things, you know, whenever you see a story of a missile hitting an apartment complex, for example, that is tragic. You know, it's tragic and it's a war crime, but it doesn't help the Russians win the war.
Ian Williams is a fellow in the International Security Program at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He's also the Deputy Director of the Missile Defense Project. Mr. Williams, thanks for your time. Thanks for your analysis today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Public opinion around the world about the war in Ukraine is as varied as the world itself. As we dig deeper, though, sometimes we find that people are not simply victims of one side's propaganda. There's often very deep historical context that informs today's opinions. Anne Applebaum is a staff writer for The Atlantic, a Pulitzer Prize-winning historian and senior fellow at the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. She speaks with Tatiana Voroshko, managing editor of VOA's Ukraine service.
We talk a little bit about how it's viewed from outside of Russia, outside of Ukraine. The most recent Pew Research poll, said that about one-third of Americans, 34%, most of the people have positive view of Ukraine, but 34% have negative view, so which struck me. So this is a country fighting for its own survival. Why almost one-third of Americans view it negatively? Is it that many watch Russian propaganda?
It's not just Russian propaganda. American far-right and far-left propaganda are also focused on supporting Russia and attacking Ukraine. There are a number of very prominent and important American politicians, number one being Donald Trump, who are openly and quite aggressively anti-Ukrainian, and they influence people there, unfortunately. One of the other odd things is that support for Ukraine in America goes up when the Ukrainians seem to be winning, and then it sometimes goes down or becomes weaker when people are less clear about the outcome. So it's also, you know, there's some strange psychology. And then finally, I would say America is now a very polarized, very partisan country where people have very opposite views. And the fact that Biden is president and Biden is supporting Ukraine means almost by definition that some percentage of Americans don't. So, I mean, I think that's maybe more important than Russian propaganda.
You also mentioned the argument on the left, and it's very prevalent in Latin America. For example, the Brazilian president even said that the West should stop pouring weapons in Ukraine because it's only prolonged the conflict. And for me, it's like, it's not that hard to understand that if a victim needs to defend itself from the big aggressors, it needs tools. So what's going on the left? Why are they using this argument? And what is going on morally and intellectually? Because this argument...
What's going on is you're hearing decades of suspicion of the United States is what you're actually hearing. And the feeling in Latin America that, you know, this inability to believe that Russia started the war, somehow America must be to blame. America must be to blame for continuing the war. It's a focus on the United States and a real lack of knowledge about Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine has not actually been very active in diplomacy in Latin America over the last 30 years. It's not a country that many Latin American leaders know well. So I think it's a combination of ignorance and, as I said, this kind of focus on America as the source of where if something's going bad in the world, it must be America's fault.
The other popular belief, both in Latin America and in Africa, saying that kind of equating Russia with the Soviet Union, and without understanding that probably those doctors who were treating you might have as well be Ukrainians, and it seems like Ukraine almost ceding the past and you know the legacy, some of the good legacy of the Soviet Union. What can it do about that? How can it explain it? Yes, those are our soldiers, there's our doctors, there's our pilots, and should it do it?
I mean, I'm not sure that it's worth it now to try and reclaim the Soviet legacy, because I think it's not really about a specific memory of Soviet help. It's more, as I said, this idea that America and the Western world are the source of whatever is evil and negative. I think that's more important than a specific links to the Soviet Union. I mean, the Soviet Union has been gone for 30 years. And so anybody who remembers it now is very old. And so this is more of a theoretical idea rather than a real idea.
VOA's Tatiana Voroshko speaking with Pulitzer Prize-winning writer and historian Anne Applebaum. The Russian media crackdown that followed its invasion of Ukraine has made it more difficult for people outside the country to know what Russians think about the war. Reporter Jania Dilut met some Russian tourists in Egypt who explained how their lives have changed.
Scuba diving instructor Tamara Taratorina says business has been down since the invasion of Ukraine, when sanctions cut Russians' access to credit cards and stopped international flights. The St. Petersburg-based tour operator says she canceled many trips before bringing this group of divers to Egypt.
This year, it is very difficult to persuade somebody to go on vacation. Ticket prices have doubled. Well, at least now there are flights available. And second, in the fall, we had a wave of mobilization, and many men left Russia. And now a vacation is on the very bottom of their priority list as they try to figure out how to feed their families back in Russia.
The war has brought new Russian laws prohibiting anti-war statements or calls for international sanctions against the country. Viktor Chepozhov is a Moscow diving instructor.
You can be punished for a wrongly said phrase or an imprecisely expressed thought or a thought that contradicts some current principles. Mainly, the people who disagree would discuss it in their own kitchen. There is no open public discussion when it comes to the topic of the special military operation in Ukraine.
Diver Alexei Mitrohin is from the city of Voronezh, less than 300 kilometers from the Ukraine border. He says during a war, people should not criticize their government.
I believe you should support your government in these times. Even if you disagree, you can express your opinion after everything is over.
These Russian tourists agreed on one thing. They all empathize with people on both sides who lost loved ones and want the war to end. Jenny Adulo for VOA News, Hurghada, Egypt.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage of Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.